Even in years without major wildfires, there's a debate about the forests that might burn in the future. There's general agreement that there's plenty of woody material in the public forests that could burn, but what to do with that material is about where the agreement ends. The U.S. Senate is the current residence of the Resilient Federal Forests Act, H.R. 2936. H.R. because it started in the House of Representatives and already passed there 5 weeks ago. The votes split generally on party lines. Republicans Greg Walden, a sponsor, and Doug LaMalfa voted yes. Democrats Peter DeFazio and Jared Huffman voted no. Kurt Schrader in the Oregon 5th voted yes, one of few Democrats to do so. We heard from a pro-timber group that supports the bill yesterday. Today we'll get another view from an environmental group, in this case the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, generally called KS Wild, where George Sexton is the conservation director and my guest in the studio. George, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Is this something of an annual event now? A bill like this passes the House and then goes on to the Senate to die there, essentially?
Well, there's no doubt that there are a few timber industry proponents in the House that would like to roll back conservation laws and environmental protections to speed logging on public lands, and that they see this last year's fire season as a way to push that agenda.
I know the bill itself was actually introduced in June, I noticed, before fire season, but of course the urgency picks up. It did pass November 1st. Is there something of a greater concern among environmental groups now? Because if something does get to the president, you have a president who's more than likely to sign it?
I think that that's true. What's fortunate is that on the West Coast, you've got our senators, in particular Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, who are proposing solutions to the fire and fuels and forest management debate that focus on areas where there are more agreement and that have more of a scientific rationale to them. In particular, Merkley and Wyden would like to directly address the fire borrowing problem that's swallowing so much of the Forest Service budget. It's tough right now for the Forest Service to do any of its multiple use mandate other than fire suppression and fire exclusion, because they're spending so much of their dollars and their personnel time on fire exclusion and fire suppression. So things like recreation, road maintenance, small diameter and plantation thinning, prescribed fire, those parts of the puzzle are getting lost as more and more of their dollars are going just towards fire exclusion and fire suppression. So the Wyden-Merkley approach would be, let's end fire borrowing, where the Forest Service takes money from those other programs that might result in benefits both to fire hazard and to the suite of multiple use values, and let's fully fund fire suppression and fire management. That's not the approach that H.R. 2936 takes, which is primarily to roll back environmental and conservation protections.
So you're saying a lot of the issue is just that the money that could be going to projects that would help keep the woods from being quite so flammable are instead going to deal with the fires that are happening now.
That's exactly the position of the Trump-appointed chief of the Forest Service right now. So it's not just my position. The current Forest Service chief says that the agency has all of the existing authority it needs to manage forests in a sustainable and productive way, that it doesn't need to roll back conservation laws. What it needs is for Congress to stop strangling its budget and for it to have the authority to fight wildfires with funds from FEMA rather than from taking them from their other Forest Service accounts.
Dollars aside, is there any agreement between environmental groups like yours and the timber industry on just some basic numbers, like the claim from Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities yesterday that there are roughly 100 million acres of federal forests at risk of catastrophic fires? Are there some sets of numbers at least you guys can agree on?
Well, I tend to focus on the local. I don't know what the numbers are nationally. I do know that in southwest Oregon and in northwest California, in the 8 million acres that the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center watches, which includes some of the most wild lands in the continental U.S., that the stands that tend to have the highest fire hazard are the millions of acres of public and private forest lands that have been converted into dense young tree plantations. And so fire after fire, whether it be the Douglas Fire, the Timbered Rock Fire, Chetka Bar Fire, it's rare that you'll see an existing fiber plantation that doesn't burn at a stand replacing level, where it's not a a high severity fire.
When you say fiber plantation, same species, same age generally?
Generally, although sometimes you'll have more than one conifer in the plantation. Mm-hmm. But yes, they're dense. They look more like Christmas tree farms than like an old growth forest. And the old growth forests tend to burn at a lower severity. Now, those are tendencies and not laws, right? But that is what the post-fire reports always say. And so what is particularly troubling about HR 2936 is that it would encourage the conversion of old-growth forests into these flammable plantations. And in particular, there's a categorical exclusion for early seral habitat creation, which certainly sounds nice. You know, everyone likes early things and habitat, right? But that is the timber industry euphemism for taking out a mature forest and replacing it with a fiber plantation, which, again, is how you increase rather than decrease fire hazard.
So you had to do a fair amount of decoding, it sounds like, because upon the claim of KS Wild that this is a clear-cutting bill, I looked and the word clear-cut doesn't appear in there anywhere, and it's a big bill.
Right, and the timber industry version of clear-cutting is early seral habitat creation.
All right. We're talking to George Sexton, who's the conservation director at KS Wild, about the Resilient Federal Forests Act. H.R. 2936 has passed the House, is sitting in committee in the Senate. Fate unknown. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Bonnie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with George Sexton.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate that Mr. Sexton mentioned one thing that would really help would be for the Forest Service to have more funding for small diameter and plantation thinning to help improve these tree plantation or, you know, ailing recovery forests. Could you explain how that works and how we can get that funding? I know our senators support it.
All right. Thanks for that, Bonnie.
Yeah, I can take a stab at that. Anyone who's ever climbed Mount McLaughlin or flown out of the Medford Airport, when you fly from Portland to Medford, or you get a view of the landscape of southwestern Oregon, it looks a lot like a chessboard, because every other section of land, you know, particularly the closer you get to the valleys, is either owned by BLM or industrial timber companies. And then as you get higher into the mountains, it's Forest Service land. And you can literally see those squares. And the reason for that is because there's been so much clear cutting, both in the past and currently. Our landscapes are defined by second and third growth plantations that tend to carry fire. And those smaller diameter trees often have less timber volume and are worth less as an individual tree than one large old growth tree. But the old growth tree provides habitat values and watershed values and is more fire resilient. And so the pressure on federal land managers to meet timber volume targets tends to be go in and log the old growth. And we're seeing that over and over again, particularly on BLM lands right now. There are several proposals, the Griffin Half Moon timber sale up by Howard Prairie, the North Landscape timber sale on the east side of the Cascade, Siskiyou National Monument, that focus on the BLM term regeneration, which is creating yet more of these plantations. So how funding would look that would thin the existing plantations rather than creating more of them would be that the agencies would be empowered to do more plantation thinning, which means more acres treated, but might not produce the same amount of timber volume. One thing we have going for us, though, economically, is that we've got not one but two mills in the Rogue Valley who can deal with small and mid-diameter timber, the Murphy Mill and the Boise Mill. And so when we do log those large old-growth trees, they tend to go out of the county to get milled. So we have the infrastructure here to do it. We have the ability to do the planning to do it. What we don't need are bills like H.R. 2936 that say only measure your success by – the volume that you produce, and that timber volume, and that is exactly what Section 911 of the bill would do, is say, BLM, you've got to offer 500 million board feet. Now, that's going to be tough for them to do without clear cutting. So if we really want to get into that fire resilience piece of the pie, we need to allow the agencies to measure their success by how many acres of prescribed fire do they use, how many acres of plantations are they able to thin, and not how much volume they're able to produce.
This is pretty much the crux, it seems like, of the whole timber debate as it goes on. I mean, the bigger the tree, the better the value, and that's where things divide. The better the value to a timber company, because it's a big tree that they can get a lot of wood out of. And from your perspective, it's a better tree because it provides greater habitat, shade, better structure for the forest itself standing there.
And this bill specifically targets old growth trees. It would eliminate what's known as the east side screens, which is that on the east side of the Cascades, so much of the old growth was removed that there are very few trees left that are over 21 inches in diameter. And that's where fire resiliency really starts to pick up. And so there's currently a prohibition on cutting those large fire resilient trees on the east side of the Cascades because there are so few of them. Why a resilient forest bill would say, go ahead and log those last few old growth trees on the east side of the Cascades is a bit of a mystery to me if the idea behind the bill is to create more rather than less resilient forests.
George Sexton is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Conservation Director at KS Wild. We are talking about the Resilient Federal Forests Act, H.R. 2936. We had a conversation yesterday about this with Nick Smith of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. You can join this one now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We got into the discussion of categorical exclusions yesterday, or CXs, as you use them, as you use the shorthand for it. Meaning what? I mean, we're talking about excluding certain projects from scrutiny, from review, from challenge?
That's exactly right. There are bedrock public participation mechanisms in a democracy where we're debating how to manage public lands that are owned by and managed for the public have generally been that there's going to be some form of public involvement, that there can be judicial oversight, you know, like a balance of powers kind of thing, that there's an environmental analysis that'll tell you what the results of your actions will be, and that there are some sort of protections for the most valuable and sensitive of environmental values, such as old growth forests or wildlands. Categorical exclusions do away with all of that. And there are places in which categorical exclusions are appropriate. The Forest Service already has over a dozen types of projects that they can use categorical exclusions for. And again, the current Republican chief of the Forest Service has said, we have all the authority we need to do the work that we would like to do. What we don't have is the funding. And so what the categorical exclusions do is they say, you don't need to include the public. You don't need to do an environmental analysis and see what the consequences of your actions will be. And you don't need to consider alternatives. It's just a checklist.
Which then it streamlines the process, but that it removes people from the possibility of making challenges to it?
It not just removes the public from the planning process, it removes the agencies from the planning process. And so if you're a federal forester or you're a federal wildlife biologist or hydrologist, you really don't have – there's no – you don't do anything towards the project. You don't review it. You don't. All you do is there's literally a checklist, and you put. I'm not joking here. You put the check mark next to your name and say, "Yeah, let's go do it," and that's it.
Yeah, when I hear all the conversations, particularly from the timber industry folks and the people who support bills like H.R. 2936 in Congress, that the reason they feel like they need to do things like streamline, you can use a different set of phrases yourself for what it is when you short circuit the process, but based on the complaint that environmental groups challenge every timber sale every step along the way. Is that a fair charge?
It's very, very difficult for an environmental group or an individual citizen to slow, change, or successfully challenge a federal project. And there are a number of reasons for that. But the primary one is because the current judicial standard for review for a Forest Service or a BLM project is called agency deference. And that means that whatever the BLM or the Forest Service decides to do, the judge already is reviewing it with the idea that unless there's something really, really wrong, the judge is not going to substitute their judgment for that of the federal agencies. That creates a situation where only the worst of the worst timber sales get challenged. And then of those, only the worst of the worst, you know, get found to be illegal or to have an injunction. Even that limited review, and that which is very much weighted towards the agencies, would go away under H.R. 2936.
Period for all sales?
Well, it would change the balance such that it would be virtually impossible to ever get an injunction on an illegal timber sale. And so you could still bring a legal challenge, mm-hmm. but all of the trees would be logged while the court was hearing the case.
All right. So you could win the case, but the landscape could be bare.
But the trees would be gone, right?
There is stuff in the bill, too, about the plaintiffs who do bring suits not getting their attorney fees repaid, which clearly makes it more expensive to challenge as well.
That's correct. And so let's say that you're a landowner in the Applegate Valley, and the Bureau of Land Management proposes a clearly illegal clear cut right behind your land, and it would slick off a stream that is important to the downstream users and to the fisheries, and you wanted to bring a legal challenge to that. You would have to match the entire legal resources of the federal government. You'd have to go out and try and hire an attorney who would be prepared to take it to court and then take it to appellate court. And the timber industry would intervene. They have a high-paid corporate law firm out of Portland that focuses exactly on this. And so you would be up against five or six highly paid attorneys that would drag you through three or four or five legal proceedings. And even if you, as the landowner, were able to prevail at the end, first of all, they'd cut the trees while they were hearing the case. And then if somehow, by some miracle, you were able to prevail, you'd be on the hook for all of the legal bills for having brought the successful challenge. And so, you know, what H.R. 2936 would do is say, yeah, you can bring a case, but A, you can never win, and B, you'll never be able to afford it.
George Sexton is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the conservation director at KS Wild. We have a couple more minutes to talk to him about the Resilient Federal Forests Act, H.R. 2936, passed the House November 1st, has been referred to committee in the Senate, and no movement of late there. We did talk to Nick Smith at Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities yesterday at 8, and that's online if you want to get a different viewpoint here. You can join us now at 800-838-3760 by phone or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Wolfgang in Sunny Valley was asking about what we were just talking about, the agency, the legal fees, but also asks if you could please address the role that the BLM plays in this bill, because there is some stuff in here that indicates that everything that is not otherwise designated for the BLM in Oregon would become ONC lands on the west side?
That's correct. And so the BLM has always been somewhat of a timber-first agency, but they do have other values that they have managed for. In particular, many of us who love public lands in southwest Oregon utilize BLM lands for hunting, fishing, clean water, wildlife, recreation, and the BLM has started to manage for fire hazard more than it has in the past. Under Section 913 of the bill, all of those other values would be subservient to timber production. And so the crown jewels of southwest Oregon, places like the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, Table Rocks, the Rough and Ready Botanical Wayside, the French Flat Botanical Area in the Illinois Valley, all of those would statutorily be required to be managed for timber first under this bill.
But lands that are designated for wilderness, for example, those are not touched by this.
DeFazio was able to remove the two very tiny BLM wilderness areas in southwest Oregon from this provision, but the majority of areas that southwest Oregonians recreate in and value as special places that have received some level of protection. Again, places like Cascade Siskiyou National Monument or Table Rocks, those are not wilderness areas. And they would be, again, subject to this timber first mandate in the bill, which is particularly frightening because Section 911 of the bill says that the BLM must offer 500 million board feet. Now, why that's significant is because the BLM has said that their sustainable yield calculation for Western Oregon is 237 million board feet. So Congress, you know, people
essentially
are
doubling what the sustainable yield is.
Right. And so folks who are saying that this bill would give land managers more tools are ignoring the places where land managers have said, hey, look, here's what we think is sustainable. And then the politicians in the timber industry are stepping in and saying, well, we want you to log double what you think is sustainable.
We have an email here from David Notown Given. He wants to know if George can explain how plantation forests burn faster than an old growth forest.
Sure. Plantation forests, if you think of a Christmas tree plantation, that's a fairly apt, you know, analogy to, and so it's a number of small diameter trees that are very close together and their crowns are very close to the ground. So it's impossible for a fire to run through there without consuming the entire tree. And because they're close together, the fire goes from tree to tree. Now, if you contrast that with an old growth tree, you could take your Bic lighter and stand against the bark of an old growth tree and hold that lighter there until your arm falls off, and you're never going to get that thing to ignite. It's a lot like building a campfire. You start with the twigs and the kindling, and you build up to the larger logs.
Do you have a sense that the two senators from Oregon, the two Democratic senators from Oregon, will seek to slow this thing down greatly in the Senate where it is now?
My sense is not that Merkley or Wyden want to slow it down. I don't think that the speed of it is the issue, but I don't know. I do know that they are working hard to try and resolve some of these issues in ways that would result in more resilient forest conditions by encouraging the use of prescribed fire, encouraging plantation thinning, and resolving the fire borrowing issue. And I'm hopeful that they will have success in doing that. The problems have been correctly identified, but what H.R. 2936 would do would say logging is the solution to every problem.
That is H.R. 2936, the Resilient Federal Forests Act. It passed the U.S. House on November 1st, has then been sent off to the Senate. It's in committee at the moment, no movement of late. George Sexton is the Conservation Director at KS Wild. We also heard from Nick Smith from Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities yesterday. You can find both of those online after today's program. George, thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity.